Well, I'm excited to talk about this topic today because it's something that's constantly on my mind. And I don't know how we're all going about doing the small talk and how this isn't a part of the daily conversation. I could talk about this all day long. Whenever I get into conversations about existentialism or God with people, I can't shut up. And it's almost overwhelming the number of thoughts I have on this topic. I think this is something that literally every single person thinks about. They have to. Even the people that you don't think that think about this, they're probably intimidated by the question, and some people don't know where to start. There was a time in my life where this question literally haunted me every day. And it was when I was going through the hardest part of my life, I would say, this 1 year of college. And actually, even before then, I would have these crises, but it was just really exacerbated by an environment full of stress. And so once a week, I would go into just a complete paralyzed state of not knowing what to do with myself because I didn't understand why anything, why we were here, why anything existed, what was the nature of our existence, where the fuck are we? Yes, we're in space. Where is space? And I think this question haunts a lot of people. And I think that there's times when people are distracted from this question stirring in them, whether it's their work, whether it's them working on themselves. But at the end of the day, when maybe not at the end of the day, but maybe at the end of the week, end of a little spurt of action going on in their life, I think this question really takes over because you're at the loss of a distraction. And the self-realization comes in, and your consciousness kicks in. And I mean, hey, it's only normal, and I think there'd be something wrong with you if you weren't asking this question. Now I feel like I'm at a point in my life where I've asked myself so many questions and came up with my own answers. I've read certain things that have helped shape my beliefs, and I feel like I'm at a point where I have stable enough beliefs that can't answer every single question I have about life, but it can answer enough. And for me, my religion wasn't enough. I was raised Catholic, and that led to so many spiraling questions for me because I couldn't understand a world where it was also existing, where this religion had all these rules. It just didn't make sense to me. And I was craving other people's answers. I wanted to know what everyone else thought and what everyone else's theories were so it could help shape mine. And so that's what I kind of want to do today, just to share my theory and my point of view on life. And maybe it can help shape yours a little better. Maybe it can strengthen your own arguments, even if your beliefs may be different than mine. Or maybe I can give you a good starting point. Whatever this does for you, you don't have to adopt my beliefs. Like I said, if it strengthens your own and gives you a stronger argument against what I'm saying, then so be it. But I just hope that it's helpful in some way. I'm not even going to waste any time because I know people hate when podcasts drag in the beginning and you just want to get to the bulk of the content. So we're going to start right up front with what my belief on life is. So, I've been through a long journey of asking questions, and here's where I've landed. I think that we, as creatures, we're mammals, and I think we forget that we are no different than the birds around us, the bees, the trees. Trees not being sentient beings, but who are we to say? Who are we to say they're not sentient? But why don't we ask, why is that tree there? Or looking at your dog, you're like, why is my dog existing here? But we do ask that about ourselves, and we know that animals have a brain, that they are conscious. We don't question the existence of nature. Nature just is. They just are. And so why don't we ever apply this concept to ourselves as well? We are also a product of nature. We are also a part of nature. I don't think that we're any different. Nature simply exists, and we let nature do its thing. We let funky things in nature happen. We let the trees just grow. Maybe we don't always do that. And that's, you know what? That's the part of humanity that needs to be fixed. But we watch nature just exist as its radiant self, as its natural state of being. And I think we should be applying the same exact principle to ourselves. And that's almost a liberating feeling in a world where it can feel very oppressive, all the forces telling you to live your life like this, or to change your appearance in this way, or to be this certain version of yourself, be a better version of yourself constantly. So it's just refreshing to think about ourselves in this way, to just let ourselves be our authentic selves. Why are we asking so much of ourselves when we don't ask nature around us to change? We accept it for what it is, and we're like, hey, nature is innately beautiful, being unique in its own way. I journal this fundamental belief of mine literally at the end of every night or at the end of a journal entry, just saying, all I need to do is just be here. All I need to do is exist in this moment. And that's really the truth of it. All you need to do is simply exist. You don't need to be going out and doing all of these things, achieving all these things. And that's something that's really helped me and my anxiety. We are human beings, not human doings. It's in the name. I think a form of meditation of this is just letting myself sit there sometimes and just simply acknowledge that I'm just existing. Just letting myself exist as is. All you need to do in this present moment is just breathe in and out, and you will keep existing. My theory goes a little further than this, though. I think that life is to also experience, not just to be, but because we are, I think, creative mediums where we're capable of being art, creating art. And we're already here on this planet. Let's take advantage of it because there's so many things that we can do to experience life. I think it's to experience, but also needing to take care of yourself so that you can enjoy your experience the most that you can. But I also believe that we're here to help others enjoy their experience here on Earth as well. If you've heard the saying, we are spiritual beings having a human experience, I'm a full believer of that. I don't think life is about being successful and ending up at this end point of your journey, because I believe that life is the journey. The destination is the journey that we're on. And there's art in the way that we live our lives. There's art in the way that we discover ourselves, our personality, our values, and our core identity. And, you know, like I said, I don't have every answer to everything. And so a little side note on this, something that I struggle with is wrapping my head around why we feel so disconnected from our truest selves. Because if our truest selves are, it's almost like it's inside of us, but it lies dormant until we reveal it into ourselves. That part confuses me, because Let me step back. In college, I took this Buddhism class, and Buddhists believe that their truest selves could be found through enlightenment and nirvana. And the analogy that my teacher taught me was like you being covered in mud, and your life's work was to clean off the mud to reveal your truest self underneath. And this kind of makes me wonder, why are we in a physical body when our immaterial truest self is almost like trapped within it? Why are we confined to these bodies where we can't understand our souls in the first place? Because if we were never in these human bodies, then we wouldn't have to do the work to find ourselves in the first place. Our truest selves would just be, would just exist. So that's something that I don't know how to fully answer. But I think an interesting theory is that, you know, maybe the universe was just capable of doing anything. And they're like, hey, well, this would be a fun little game to have all these versions of myself and have myself be in like these physical bodies and those human brains trying to identify like what I am. I don't know. Let's not go down that rabbit hole. And I just want to be fully transparent about the thoughts that come up in me, because if I didn't, it would make it seem like I have this very comprehensible view on life. And I just hope that the questions that come up in me just resonate with you. Okay, so when I think that life is about enjoying the experience, just enjoying life, what does that mean? Does that mean we should just drink ourselves drunk all the time? Does that mean we should be eating whatever food we want all the time? And why is everyone trying to be on a diet when you could literally be eating whatever the fuck you want all the time? Like, why are we caring about what we're eating? We should just enjoy life, right? Why do we care about working out? Well, I think that to enjoy life, we still have to have discipline. Because say if we put off eating nutritiously, we put off going outside to get some fresh air, we put off trying to get some movement in our bodies, we would feel like physical shit. This is why we need discipline, because it helps us get things done that have delayed gratification. And the moments of discipline are not always easy, and they're not always enjoyable, but it is necessary to do these things to make life as enjoyable as possible. This is a good reminder anytime I'm feeling unmotivated, say I don't want to go to the gym, when I remember that it's to take care of my body and so that I can physically feel well, I'm much more motivated to go and do something versus if I'm telling myself, hey, you need to go to the gym because I'm trying to beat this body into a skinnier and fitter body. Let me tell you, that mindset will not last. That will not stick. And that's definitely another conversation we could totally have. I just know what my body feels like when I don't take care of it and when I do neglect it and when I indulge a little too much in the instant gratification sorts of things. Okay, so if life is to simply exist, here we are having this experience, and we're doing it. Check. Why does it feel like we're still chasing something? I think everyone understands that feeling. Even me believing, hey, all I need to do is just be my radiant self, be my authentic self. Check. I'm living life. That's how you're supposed to live. I still don't feel completely satisfied. It feels like I need to do something more with myself. And here's my theory on that. I think there's a lot of factors at play, and I think this could be its own episode. But here are some of the things that I was thinking about. So when you look at other animals, let's take a gorilla. Its main priorities and core concerns are food, shelter, safety, and reproduction. For us, living in modern-day society, I think that our careers are inadvertently, indirectly fulfilling our survival needs concerning food and shelter and partially safety in a more luxurious and convenient way. I don't think that we're actively realizing that we're distracting ourselves from those four core concerns, but in a way, our careers are, because careers don't offer just food, shelter, and safety. It also is fulfilling some other external need in us. Maybe, say, fulfilling or satisfying the ego and our sense of accomplishment, our sense of pride. Not only are our careers a distraction, quote-unquote, not in a bad way. Obviously, there's many great things about it. But we also distract ourselves through self-actualization. That being self-discovery, self-growth, finding our independence, and finding our life meaning, our personal life purpose. This kind of guides us away from our core values of being animals. However, I think it's only natural for us to want to discover more of ourselves and to find our fullest potential. So, I mean, someone could argue that that is focusing on your survival skills because you're trying to maximize your intelligence, which definitely would give you a one-up in your biological fitness. But I think the priority of a career versus just focusing on food, shelter, and safety, like those, we don't necessarily think about those being the same goal. We think of a career as some accomplishment for us, some sort of external thing that measures our success. I think we forget that it's kind of trying to fulfill those basic needs when a career, it offers more than that. There's more complications to it than, say, if we were living a hunter-gatherer lifestyle. We care about a career for a few reasons. One is that we use careers as fulfilling our life purpose, which I already mentioned. They fulfill the food and shelter part and partial safety and security. Two, we need a career in the first place because we need money. Money being another product of modernity. If we want access to these modern-day commodities like electricity and grocery stores and having a vehicle that isn't going to be dragged around by horses, then we have to be a part of modern-day society. Because I don't think that the Honda dealership is going to accept hand-sewn journals and baked pies and food preserves that was made in my kitchen and in my home. Three, our careers are also something that gives us a formal role of helping the people around us and contributing to society, which is totally normal because even when we lived more nomadic lives, living in small communities and tribes, that was a part of our nature. Everyone had a role in their community, and we would be nothing without each other. Careers aren't necessarily a bad thing, but there's such a formality in it, and I think they exist because we have such a large human population. Like, we are busting at the seams with the human population. And we're also in a time where we have the preservation of knowledge. And we also have access to a vast amount of knowledge. When, like, decades ago, that wasn't even possible. People had to go to the libraries if they wanted to know an answer to their question, or maybe ask another person. Well, here we are. If you had a question about anything, you can just pull out your phone out of your back pocket and just type it into Google and you'll get your answer in less than a minute. So with all of this advancement, technological advancement, and the increased efficiency in literally every process, society is just advancing very quickly, and we're all trying to achieve greater things, and we are doing that. We treat society like moving parts of a machine, and since we're constantly trying to achieve something better and better in whatever metrics that may be, it has created all of these positions in society and newer positions in society. And let me explain this a little further, because, you know, communities back then had positions or careers as we do now, like an apothecary, a healer, a doctor. There was definitely some sort of leadership where there's a council. I mean, the equivalent for us would be all the politicians. Anyway, the roles in smaller communities in the past versus the occupations that we have nowadays, they have their differences. Today, we have social contributions coming from dietitians, maybe a football coach from the NFL, music teachers, people that study business and look at statistics to maximize company profits. We have social media managers now. And they didn't have all that. They did not have all that back then, because the careers that we have today are almost out of convenience and this life of relative luxury. Because the idea of a dietitian back then, like that, I think there was just one doctor. A doctor, and that just about covered everything. You got back problems, go to the doctor. You think you might be having some sort of nutritional deficiency, go to the doctor. But now we have all these specialties because we can, because there's such a wealth of knowledge about all these different disciplines. So we're able to do that. Yet, not all of these careers are necessarily needed. I don't really know how to conceptualize the intricacies of our society and like why, how it has come to be that we have all these, just all these, I don't know, that I might be getting wrapped up in the things I'm trying to sort through right now. But these occupations I just talked about, like, they are possibilities for all of us. You could be the next NFL coach. You could be a dance teacher. You could be an art teacher. You could be working for some company where you're trying to help them reduce costs and increase efficiency. I think the amount of weight we put on prioritizing a career, though, it gets us a little off focus on what careers are actually there for. Yes, they are to help the people around us, help contribute to society. And yes, it's helping you get money so that you can feed yourself and take care of yourself, get yourself a place to live. But imagine, let's say you're that person working in business, working for a company. Does it actually feel like you're helping society when you're helping the people at the top? Does it feel like you're helping society when you're just lining their pockets with more money? That's where the lines get blurred. Where is the fulfillment in someone working in business to help a company accumulate more money? I don't think people in business feel fully satisfied in fulfilling their social role. Like that natural feeling of wanting to help society. These people are cooped up in buildings, living their work days as maybe inauthentic versions of themselves, having this professional business facade on where people aren't able to be their full human selves, working hard to hopefully get compensated for their hard work by getting a raise, which is a nice external measure of our value, but still isn't fully representative of who we are. Modern day life has conditioned some workers like this to place their life value and purpose into something outside of themselves. That being how well they perform at work, how quickly they work, how impressive they are, how efficiently they can do a task. That is not normal. Working on a computer all day is not normal. These people may be chasing life fulfillment in a place where they're not going to get it, a place lacking creativity and creative freedom. Do you see the problems with modern day society? Like how unnatural of an environment we all are in every day. Modern day life gives many paths to make money, has many different kinds of roles in society to play. But a lot of the roles are just unnatural and the path to get there is hard. There's lots of barriers, like needing a college degree, having to actually go to college, having money to go to college or having money for certain opportunities, having connections. And while you're in college, you're stressed over studying, cramming in your grades, which is just another external measure of our success that is not natural because it was a system created partially or maybe mostly to create these efficient robots that are conducive to quote-unquote better society. And again, are jobs like these, are they truly fulfilling? Is doing monotonous research for a lab for your PhD where your principal investigator, your PI, is pressuring you to work faster to get the paper published faster? Does that feel like you're living a natural, primitive, primal, animalistic life? I think the stakes are just too damn high. It's made up stress. I mentioned this example because my sister is getting her PhD right now, and she's in that exact place where, yes, she loves to learn and is exploring this through studying organic chemistry, yet her PI, which is the person who is overlooking you and you're working in their lab, she's feeling pressured by her PI to get the research done faster, which how can you really speed up research? Research is mostly failure, and it's a lot of error and problem solving from there. And yes, research has led to good things, but the pressure on these people to create something new, to produce more knowledge, and to create advancement is too much. Like, everyone, we actually have the basics of what our society needs. Maybe not the basics, but hey, we're all here. Healthcare exists. Food exists. We are able to produce food and distribute it in a relatively efficient way. The majority of people have access to clean water. I mean, obviously, all of these things I'm listing, they could all be improved. But I'm talking about the ambitious side of things. We're so eager to have successes and create something impressive. And I think that's great. Ambition is great, but at the expense of people's health, the expense of people's peace, I don't think we need to push it that far. And side note, I'm well aware that the world is fucked up because all our problems are basically driven by greed when our money is going towards funding wars and we have people that own five or more luxury cars, and then there's people in the world that don't even have clean water. when we're not even worried about like the basic things that everyone needs to survive. Anyway, back to what I was saying. Like, hey, Nick Sirianni, coach of the Eagles, does your life feel like you're living like a primal being, like a natural being? To retail workers, does helping people buy items and watching people contribute to mass consumerism feel fulfilling to your soul? Does getting someone to sign up for the credit card fulfill you? And yes, there's satisfaction in making commission from a sale you made, but is that actually representative of the value you offer as a person? Or maybe your value comes in the compassion you're able to give people around you, not necessarily how good you are at selling items, how good you are at making customers excited to be in the store. You know, people's values come from within, not how well they're able to perform as some work robot. There's all these different roles, all these options to partake in society, yet they have you measuring your success by man-made metrics. They boost people's sense of self-worth measured by these man-made metrics. And when your value is not solely based on those, and maybe not even at all. I think we will all be constantly chasing because our idea of success isn't even related to simply being alive and simply being existent. Our idea of success isn't just the fact that we could get ourselves fed and housed. Because that is success. Biologically, that is success if we're fed and sheltered and safe. Society has conditioned us to make us think that we need to make achievements in life, and has made us think that we need more than the bare minimum. The expectations are much higher of what it looks like to be successful and accomplished. To be a part of society, it takes grit and the hustle mentality. Like, this has been drilled into us since we were young. Okay, you go to preschool, then you go to elementary school, where they teach you it's important to work hard, do your homework. And right when you're about to leave elementary school, they're like, middle school's not going to tolerate this. You're going to have to learn how to work harder. And then in middle school, they're like, high school's not going to tolerate this. You need to learn how to work harder and be better. And then in high school, they're like, college isn't going to tolerate this. We're always future thinking that we're going to end up somewhere more prestigious or somewhere more serious where it ends up leading to our career. Having our lives be based around forming us into people that can learn the best that we can, perform the best that we can, so that we can become desirable people, desirable workers. And the fact that we're measured with grades and also measured against the people in our class. We're just conditioned to work, 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 and base our value and our well-being on how much we are working and how well we are working. Yet there's people out there that maybe aren't living the hunter-gatherer lifestyle, but they're living lives more connected to nature. Take people living the van life, where they're traveling all across the country, going to beautiful places, hiking in beautiful places, and living a very minimalistic lifestyle. And these people look happy. They look like they feel like they belong in what they're doing. And it's because they're connected to nature. I think we, the majority of society, feel disconnected from our primal selves, not being outside every day. We make getting our bodies to move a session at the gym rather than a lifestyle where normally, you know, animals move around all day. Us, we're maybe sitting all day for work or sitting all day to study. Or maybe jobs have us tied up so there's not really a lot of time to prioritize moving our bodies. There's speed making food and eating as quickly as possible to get back to work and trying to efficiently prepare food on Sundays before the week starts. versus taking the time to prepare food every day, which is a very natural thing. You're nourishing yourself, you're feeding yourself. Like, why do you think cooking feels so good? Why do you think people enjoy cooking? It's because it's scratching this biological need in our brains. It's like, yes, I'm taking care of myself. This is something that's good for my survival. Release the dopamine. Modern day life just interferes with our focus on the primary life values related to survival. We're not ordinary animals, though, and this is where things get complicated because we can't just focus on those core values. Because we could be living off the land, but we're not. We choose to have access to electricity and modern-day housing. And I'm pretty sure, like, at least in America, all land is owned. And like, most land in the world, except large parts of Antarctica, because who wants to live in Antarctica? The housing market and the land market is not booming there. I think what we can conclude is that the modern world is complicated, and there are so many factors that have so many things involved that are playing with one another, that are creating the dynamics we see in our everyday life. And for one person to understand it all, that'd be super hard. I think we're basically just assimilated into living this modern life that is so much further from our natural animalistic style of living. We're so far from our roots that we don't even think of ourselves as animals. In fact, if someone called you an animal, you would be insulted. Which doesn't make sense because that's what we are. The people that are living these more basic lifestyles closer to our ancestors, the hunter-gatherer lifestyle, they're a part of the large minority. There's about 10,000 people on Earth that still live as members of tribes. And I think most of them are in the Amazon. But most of us weren't born into that life. We were born into maybe a home in a neighborhood. And it wasn't a question of whether or not we would be a part of modern day society. We just were born into it. Another thing to think about, careers kind of distracting us from our core values. Careers distract us from reproducing. It delays our reproduction instinct, and I think that's why a lot of us feel like we're chasing something. Why does everyone want to be in a relationship? Why do people feel lonely, and why does that feeling suck and feel like you want to change it or like crawl out of your own skin or literally just stop existing so you don't have to feel it anymore? Our bodies are trying to get us to mate. They're like, reproduce, bitch. I think reproducing has to be the strongest genetic trait in all of us, because if we didn't have this, then we wouldn't be here. The human population would not persist. But this is the norm now. We don't base our lives off of having a relationship. I'm not doing that. I'm prioritizing myself. I'm like, I would rather invest my energy in myself than to invest energy towards finding someone when I don't even know if that energy is going to pay off. I'd rather do some self-discovery, do some self-growth, work on myself, work on learning more about myself, work on improving the skills I have in the hobbies that I'm trying to do. And then again, people go chasing their careers because careers are just this thing that supposedly is supposed to encapsulate all of our passions and what we want to do with our lives. And so people focus on that versus finding a mate out there, which totally makes sense. But with this praising of independence and self-actualization, we don't make finding a mate a priority, which I ain't doing that, like I said. But I think that's what makes the genetic and evolutionary alarms go ringing, because they're like, what are you doing? Ladies, your eggs are going to expire at some point. and you got to make a baby. You got to make babies. And this is an interesting topic to me on why we are all so picky about, I'm going to say mates as a scientific term, because this is how we're breaking it down today. Because thinking about things scientifically, that's how you can get some answers. It is normal for females to be selective. That's a fact in nature. And I think, is it with seals where the seals will like crowd around the female and they'll fight each other? Whoever comes out the strongest, the female seal is like, yeah, you're mine. We're going to make some babies together because you strong, sir. Come here. And so naturally for humans, it's not going to be any different, but it does get to a point where there are people that are like, I literally don't want to marry anyone because none of you guys are great out here. Why is that? Because evolutionarily, that shouldn't make sense. First of all, I think this is a product of us having a neocortex. That's not to say that we're the smartest that humans have ever been, because maybe we are, but not because of the structure of our brains. It's because of the access to knowledge that we have, because we're actually not at peak intelligence. Our brain sizes are smaller than they once were. The brain size for humans peaked, I think, a while ago. But we live in a world of language. We live in a world where we talk about mental health. We live in a world where we have compounded generations of wisdom and knowledge and are able to access it whenever we want. And so these plant small seeds in us and expose us to all certain facts, and we're able to draw our own conclusions and have people tell us what their thoughts are. And now I think we've just become a lot more educated about ourselves, and we're able to learn about ourselves more, able to learn about other people. People study sociology, the study of human interactions. We understand the mechanisms behind human nature so much better now. And when you have a fuller understanding of yourself and you're trying to find someone out there who's going to match those values and those understandings you have within yourself, it's going to be a lot harder. That makes us all so individualized. In conclusion, I think we're just really out of touch with our natural state of being in so many ways. Okay, are you wondering how I haven't brought up God yet? Well, here it is. Ooh, God could be a whole nother topic, man. So, I haven't mentioned God yet. And I don't believe in God. Because if I did, I would have mentioned that in the purpose of us being alive. And if you fully believed in God, why did you click on this episode? All right? So you're with me. I don't think that there's any overarching purpose of us being here. I don't believe in the religious beliefs that God is, that God has a plan for us, and we need to prove our loyalty to this man. We need to show him that we trust him, that we're a good human being, that are following the rules outlined in the Bible. Because he's going to bring us salvation one day. Because when we die, we're going to live for eternity with him in heaven. We're all goodnesses. God is good. God is all good. His intentions are good. And he has a desired plan for you. No matter how shitty your life might look, in the end, things are going to work out for the better because God would not let you down. No. I'm just going to highlight a few reasons why I don't believe in God. And it is impossible to have a conversation on what the meaning of life is without mentioning God. So I grew up Catholic, and a few years ago, I really struggled with believing in God, yet having certain questions in my life where I'm like, what I'm seeing in life and my questions about life are not being answered by religion at all. If there's a reason why we're all here, then that means that God is withholding that and just telling us to have faith in Him, to just trust Him. And if you don't trust Him, well, pack your bags. You might be going to hell. You're not praising Him. You're turning away from God. See you on the south side. No. This man is asking us to put our trust and loyalty into Him, and He will reward you. Does that not sound like some egotistical maniac controlling people as puppets? And I've felt the pain of feeling in the unknown, not knowing why we're here on this earth, why I'm suffering in a certain way. And it's painful not knowing. It's painful not being able to justify any of that. And hey, I have actually a whole episode on that. How can we justify our pain? If you want to listen to that. But I don't believe in a God that would leave us all here when we're supposedly as children here just lost. Because I've prayed many, many times. I went to bed praying. I woke up, was praying. Never once did I hear this man whisper in my ear. Mm-mm. Another thing, free will. So, okay, Jesus died on the cross. Thank you, Jesus. God decided to make us imperfect because He could have made us perfect, meaning that we didn't sin, but He didn't. But thank you, Jesus, because now we can be forgiven for our sins. Okay, there was a time in my life, there are still times, where the pain I feel as a human being feels so, so insufferable that any amount of good, all the good things I'm thinking about in my life cannot outweigh the terrible feeling of my reality. And I would rather not have existed than to have existed. Like, I'm okay not experiencing the good that I have in my life. If I was never born, you know, I can't be sorry about that. I wouldn't have existed to have cared. I would rather know nothing than to know this feeling, is how I put it. And so this concept of free will, yes, we're here to do whatever we want, but I didn't get to say if I wanted to be here or not as a human being. That's not free will. God did not ask me, hey, you wanna live this human life? And I've asked my sister's boyfriend that. My sister and her boyfriend, they're very Catholic people. Not in the way where Catholicism has been misconstrued and misunderstood. I actually respect their beliefs a lot and respect how educated they are about their faith because I can have such great conversations with them and be enlightened in a way. But yeah, even my sister's boyfriend, he did not know how to answer that question. That free will question I had, and so that's what I mean. Religion can't, like, it doesn't all make sense to me. Another thing, I cannot conceptualize hell. So here is God, this being that can do anything, so, and He is everything, He is infinite. How is this man creating a place where He's not existing? This is how my sister explained hell to me. God didn't create this place that was specifically bad and would lead to, like, people being tortured and miserable and all the scary things that we know about hell. God was just like, hey, you don't want to be with me? Okay, you don't want to follow my path? Okay, that's fine. I'm going to make this place where I'm not existent, and that's where you're going to go. And here's the thing, God is all-knowing, so that means he knew what that place being hell, would turn out to be. So if I'm a believer in a God that's all good, why did he create hell and allow people to be sent to this place, knowing that they were going to be, like, basically tortured, basically living a life of misery, full of evil? I don't want to believe in a God like that. Like, if I'm thinking that he's all good, my God who is all good would not do that. I think when you see all the awful things that happen in the world as well, that can also really make you question your faith in a God. Because, okay, if we're talking about good and evil, evil being a product of people having free will, and that's just, you know, what we get. If I were God, all right, let's imagine, okay, I'm God, and I'm infinite. I can do anything. I can create material from nothing. I can create a physical world from literally nothing. Okay, I'm bored. Like, I am just infinite. Let me do something. I am going to create a world with humans. Okay, these are my children. Yes. Now, I'm going to give them free will. But that may cause some of them to do some bad things and cause harm unto others. Yet, the existence of evil creates the existence of good. They cannot exist without one another. And there's going to be people that understand that nature, and they're going to be, you know, they're going to be grateful because they're like, you know, you can't be happy without sadness. You can't have love without hate. You can't have light without dark. They're going to know that. And all of the goodness that comes from being a human being, they're going to be so grateful for that. Okay, they're going to see that everything has a reason. You know, a tsunami taking out chunks of the population, that has a reason. You know why? It made the people that survived, it made them grateful for their lives. And it also tested the people's strength. Because, you know, Sheila, she lost her mom. But guess what? Now she's going through this journey where her faith in me is being questioned. And she has the chance to prove herself to me. Sheila, she's a good one. What? I'm sorry. If I were God, I wouldn't want to let people enjoy goodness at the expense of other people's lives. Like, okay, a tsunami's a part of nature. Did that have to happen? Like, if I were God, I'd be like, you know what? I'm not gonna create anything because I know the pain that people are capable of feeling. And I don't want them to have to experience that at all. Because personally, me, I, like, within the past 2 years, I would say, I feel like I felt a level of suffering that I didn't even know was possible. A state of internal suffering. And I can't rationalize why a God of all good would be okay with that. Like, yes, it allows me to appreciate the good things in life, but like I said, would rather know nothing than to know that feeling. And if you want to say everything has a reason, well, let's take rape victims. Are we really going to say that these people were raped for a reason? Absolutely fucking not. Maybe someone can say, you know what? This person, their strength was tested. And yes, they were traumatized. But seeing them rise through the ashes, they were able to reach their fullest potential. They were able to see the strength in themselves. No. No. That, to me, that is not everything happens for a reason. To me, that is saying, good can come from anything, even things as terrible as that. Because for me, that's kind of just discrediting, in this example, a rape victim saying this was supposed to be your journey. But no, that person took some very terrible thing that happened to them and persevered. Why? Because out of survival, if you let the terrible things that happened in your life take over your life, you simply will not be able to go on anymore. So you are forced to persevere. You have no choice. I cannot believe that everything happens for a reason. Someone's house being burned down? Nope. Some things are just flat out terrible that happen in this world. And I haven't even mentioned, even in the slightest, the worst of things. And another thing, God can intercede. That's what's believed by the religious. I don't know about all religions. I know Catholics believe that. But, you know, you can pray for God's intercession. Okay, God's all powerful. He can literally do anything. So, basically, in a world where I believe in God, my God is allowing these terrible things to happen. And it's just like, yeah, don't worry. Don't worry, honey. This is all happening for a reason. There's light at the end of this tunnel. Just trust me, okay? And also, I know you don't know why you're on this earth, but I'm just asking you to trust me. When you die, that's when the surprise is going to be revealed, right? What? No. Is it too late to mention that this episode isn't for people that fully believe in God? I did address that because I said, hey, if you fully believe in God, why are you listening to this episode? Because if you were asking what the meaning of life was, maybe you'd be going to your priest or your pastor, whoever. Anyway, for me, what is God then? If I don't believe in God, what do I believe in? I think God is the personification of the universal consciousness and the universal energy. I think when you personify something that's as abstract of a concept as that, it's a lot more palatable and a lot more comprehensible to people. And it's comforting thinking that there is this father-like figure looking over us. So I understand. I honestly wish I still did believe in God, because fuck, that would be nice. I do believe in a higher power. I do think that there is some, it's hard to put it into words, almost like this energy that is unifying us all, something that we all come from. And I mean, how can someone conceptualize infinity? Something that is capable of making a physical material world from no physical material. But this thing is not a father-like figure. And I think that, talking about this highest power, it's not even something that will ever be able to be fully defined by the human language, because this thing is so infinite and beyond our scope of human intelligence that even when we do try to conceptualize it, the concept of it is still too small of a scope to even capture it. When you imagine the greatest thing of all time, the greatest thing that you could possibly imagine, with the concept of infinity, that means that whatever you conceptualized, it is larger than that. And I want to talk more on this highest power idea of mine, but I did want to mention something about the good and evil happening in the world. So how do I logisticize good and evil when I don't believe in God? I think good and evil, I mean, it's all relative. When you form any moral opinion on actions, it requires that there are several actions, meaning that there are so many actions within the world that can be taken. Evil being things where others are harmed. And since I think that we're all connected by this universal energy, I think harming others is really harming yourself. But good and evil is so, it is, that is a very philosophical topic that will have to be covered in another episode. But that's just the one comment I wanted to make, because there's a whole sum of actions that we could take, but since there's all these actions, it becomes a spectrum on good and evil. Good cannot exist without evil, light cannot exist without dark. In order for something to exist, there has to be a duality of it. And we can't really logisticize why bad things happen. Nature doesn't care about all good things happening. Nature favors fitness and survival. And nature is spontaneous. An infinite number of things can happen to you, and it's just the odds. What could happen to you? Okay, let's take you throughout your day. What could happen? You could see a rainbow. You could get shit on by a bird. You could trip over a rock and twist your ankle. You could be in a drive-through line and it just so happened that you were behind a car that wanted to pay it forward, and so they paid for your food. Does that make sense? So with the sum of all the possibilities in the world on things that could happen to you, okay, well, you broke your leg. It was just the odds. It's just probability. Okay, moving on about this higher power I talked about. Metaphysically, what is happening? If you haven't heard of metaphysics, you definitely know what it is. You've definitely thought about it. But for an official definition, from Google, from Oxford Language, metaphysics is the branch of philosophy that deals with the first principles of things, including abstract concepts such as being, knowing, substance, cause, identity, time, and space. This is a question I would have all the time. Where are we right now? Space? Where is space? I would always wonder about this question when I was younger. This is my theory. I think that this highest power I've talked about is almost like a field of energy. And remember, we are limited by our human brains, right? Our human brains, like, almost confine us in a box, because when we look at the world around us, we see things as separate entities. We see, you know, I'm looking around this room right now, I see my headphones, I see my water bottle, I see my lamp. I see them as separate things. When we look at the solar system, we see those as separate things. We see Jupiter, we see Saturn, we see stars. And we see them as separate things, but what if those things aren't actually separate? What if all of these things are really a part of the same network of things, and it's just our brain has divided them as separate entities to make the world around us more comprehensible? And so with that, I'm basically saying, like, all of this really could be connected and a part of the same network of things and connected to this thing that's larger than all of us in life. I'm just going to refer to it as the highest power. I don't know how I went down that route, but I mean, yeah, that I said what I said. So I believe that this highest power, this field of energy, it's infinite, okay? All things are possible. So infinite that when I imagine this field of energy, I imagine all these interactions of all of these almost like energy waves interacting with one another. Let's take a field of things, a whole different number of things interacting with each other, able to create new things. Almost thinking about like permutations, how you can combine a certain number of things in different ways. But if you take a permutation of infinity, that's infinity. And let's say it aligned itself a certain way. And that's how matter was created. So hear me out. I'm just gonna talk you through me trying to verbalize and explain this. Our solar system came from matter, spontaneously collecting with one another. So the Big Bang Theory, large matter collided, matter being things that take up space and have mass, so it has volume and mass, and the matter spontaneously collected together, because all matter has a gravitational pull towards each other. The Earth being massive, it attracts us more than we attract the Earth, but we're actually attracting the Earth just a little bit. And so we have all this swirling matter. The matter has the forces drawing it together, and the formation of planets occurred in our solar system. And I learned in science that the world leans towards chaos. Chaos meaning spontaneity. Yet order will be preferred if the end product is more energetically favorable, meaning that the end product is more stable. I'm literally talking about laws of thermodynamics right now, like in Gibbs free energy. This is what I'm talking about. But everything around us in our lives can be broken down to energy. So I think that these principles can be similarly applied to why Earth and planets and anything worth of noting of existence, that it exists because of that reason. It was energetically favorable. It only existed because it was stable enough to. And so say we're talking about when immaterial became material, the material only was able to exist because it was stable enough to do that. But the spontaneity of things interacting with each other led to it being able to be of existence. I feel like I sound silly right now trying to explain this highest power and this just this network of energy that I envision when I imagine the highest power. But I mean, let me know if anyone out there also wants to tell me what they're thinking and how they conceptualize this. I don't think anyone knows the answer to this, so I think we're all going to sound silly. Another part of my beliefs, you know, saying that we all came from this highest power, creating material from no material, I think that we are a part of this highest power, and I'm going to use highest power and universe kind of interchangeably. We are the universe experiencing itself. We are a part of a whole. My friend explained this to me with a wave analogy because we were thinking the same thing, but my friend was able to explain it in a very helpful way, saying how we're each of us are waves, but we're all part of the same body of water. We're all a part of the same ocean. Like, yes, we're separate entities, as I said, that we view the world. But even though waves are separate, they're still a part of the same thing. And they're still part of this dynamic system. I think the highest power is this thing that is capable of everything and anything. It is a pool of possibilities. It is immaterial and created material. And if you were something capable of anything, wouldn't you want to do something with that? I have no idea if this thing can have a consciousness, but I would think so. I feel like there's this collective consciousness that it has. And we're really, each and every one of us are connected to that. Because I have consciousness, you have consciousness, and maybe we're all really the same thing, just a variation of itself. We're one of infinity. Something I just remembered, thinking about how the world could just spontaneously be created. If you were to imagine a chemistry lab filled with every single chemical imagined, an infinite number of chemicals, and all these chemicals were in the same room, a plethora of reactions would spontaneously happen, and the outcomes are endless. And I believe each and every one of us are one of the infinite outcomes. What is our consciousness? I think our consciousness is our unique energy field, our soul. And it's almost a silly thing to talk about because I don't think you'll ever be able to put the feeling of consciousness into words. And maybe we'll never be able to do that. But does that mean we can't imagine it or feel it? I think the reason I so wholeheartedly believe in consciousness is because I've had very transcendental meditations before, and I know plenty of other people in the world who also have. And these experiences are limited to me, and I'm still growing in my spirituality. But that's something, like, consciousness is something to be experienced. It can't really be explained. And we can try, and we do try our best. But, yeah. When I had these transcendental meditations, it was involved in me envisioning my highest self. And that's what kind of gives me back my power I used to feel when I believed in God. Because when I stopped believing in God, I kind of felt like I was at the mercy of nature. Like life was just going to happen and I had no autonomy. Kind of like an absurdist, how people that are absurdists just believe that life is full of chaos and you just kind of have to accept that. But connecting spiritually and envisioning my truest self and this highest version of myself, I started feeling like intense emotions of happiness. And like actually started laughing during my meditation. And in my head, I was trying to form a picture of what I would be seeing. Just seeing like streams of light and gold and like light dancing with itself. I think that's maybe the best way my human brain could conceptualize that at the time. And maybe the best way I would be able to conceptualize it. Period, ever. I do think that we have a sort of access to this network of power because we are a part of it, and maybe we are, all of us are it. My views about consciousness, and then also related to that, the quantum realm, were shaped from seeds planted by reading books by Dr. Joe Dispenza. And also the transcendental meditations definitely helped with that. And I just think everyone should explore their spirituality. I think that doing so would help you get your answers that I can't give to you by speaking words. Spirituality has definitely given me a sense of control in my life. Like I said, when I started questioning my Catholic faith and I felt connected to this highest power and feel like I have access to it, similar as your access to God, feeling like you have someone on your side, have someone who is all powerful that can do certain things. And in my own way, I'm still connected with God. It's just I'm no longer personifying it and looking at it as some sort of practice with all these rules. It totally makes sense to me why there's a lot of people out there that think we're living in a simulation, especially after they watch something like The Matrix. And I think it's because they don't have these grounding beliefs, these sorts of beliefs that you can have with spirituality. And I hate how people paint spiritual people as woo-woo-y and people that are just like a little wonky. And that, like, they're hippies and they're just kind of out of it and almost naively positive or just naive, period. I think it would be totally ignorant of all of us if we didn't believe that there was some higher level of reality happening beyond what we actually see. Okay, after all the talk about, you know, the little the little things involved when thinking about the meaning of life, God, metaphysics, good and evil, all that. How is one actually supposed to carry on living their life when they believe that it's meaningless, that life really doesn't have an inherent meaning? For me, I think I identify as an existentialist, a bit of an absurdist, and a nihilist. And existentialism is the belief that life has no meaning, but you have the power to give it meaning. I think there's a lot of people with these beliefs. Atheists, nihilists, absurdists, the existentialists, and spiritual people. And since there's no inherent meaning in life, yes, that does mean it's yours for the taking. Here's my point of view. We're all already here, okay? We exist. We can't change that. Oh, we can, but let's not talk about that today. I have before, okay? And I do have those thoughts too. So we're already here. Now we just have to make the best of our lives with the time that we do have here. And our job is to enjoy life the best that we can, to also help others. Because helping others enjoy their life, I think that's what's necessary to feel purposeful in your life. Feel like you're not just living for yourself. Because if your life is miserable, or maybe it's not miserable, but there's times in your life when you do feel miserable, you need something to anchor you. And when you're just living for yourself and it feels miserable in that moment, you're like, what the fuck am I even doing here? And I think helping others, we can justify our existence because we're like, hey, I might be miserable right now, but if I weren't here, I wouldn't be able to help this person and this person and this person. We're here now. It is our job to do the best with what we can. And this may be the only time we will have our consciousness channeled through a physical body. Like, is it going to be the only time? And after our quote-unquote human lives, I think we do return, for a lack of better words, to our global consciousness, our universal consciousness. And so, who knows if this is going to be the only time our spiritual selves will be having this human experience. And I think the physical self can do a lot of amazing things, like riding a bike, hugging someone, watercoloring, eating food, looking at sunsets, looking at mountains, looking at clouds. We can sing and dance in our bodies. We can read books. Oh, I love reading books. Our experiences also include getting into a romantic relationship, having a best friend, hearing rain, walking on the grass with your bare feet, caring for houseplants, caring for children, drinking a glass of wine, drinking a cup of tea, eating ice cream. So there's all of these things that if we weren't in a physical body, we wouldn't be able to experience them. And knowing that life is meaningless can totally be freeing. And I know, sometimes positivity is a bitter pill to swallow, and not everyone's at the right time in their lives, or like just the right time in their week to be listening to positivity or positive nihilism. And this is why I think that a selfish existence is a cryptic one. Because without other human beings around us, we would go fucking insane. And there's something about nature where there's value in helping others. I really can't validate my existence without helping other people, because helping others makes me feel purposeful. When it gets bleak for a second or two, what are you going to have grounding you? Because if you're a believer that life is meaningless, yet you're suffering, I know how hard it can be to keep going in life. And I literally made a whole episode talking about this. Like I said, how can I justify my suffering, if you want to listen? That one is episode 6. Yeah, I hope that this belief of life being inherently meaningless, that it can make you feel free to stop confining yourself to the way that society wants to. I think it's so important to think about the reason why we're all here and things beyond the superficial things we see on a day-to-day basis, like scrolling on social media, seeing that someone else has gone to another frat date party or some social event with their sorority girls, or someone has moved to Arizona and is going on these beautiful hikes. Like, reducing what we are to those very superficial measures, it's just exhausting. Stop basing your life value on the way you look and the things that you do. We are each entities of the universe, and this has helped me establish that we're all equals. We're one and the same. We're each a variation. So be free in what you do and live your fucking life. The belief that life is meaningless has definitely helped my anxiety attacks, because I remind myself, hey, you're here to enjoy life, and that's what I'm going to do. How can I enjoy my life in this present moment where everything in my life feels all-consuming? It feels like I have these things to do. Well, I could drop everything right now and make the conscious choice of just enjoying my life, enjoying being present. So maybe I can go pick up a book and read it. Maybe I can go sit on the couch and watch a show if that makes me feel good. Woo! God, that was a lot. Well, I would have loved, I mean, maybe I wouldn't have loved to go down every single thought I had today in this episode. I had to make sure to carefully draft, because there's so much that I want to say, and some of it's really hard to explain. But I just wanted this to be an overview, something that anyone could really listen to. I hope that me talking about this raised some questions in yourself and maybe gives you a sense of direction on things you can question. Maybe you'll go and look up what existentialism means. Maybe you'll look up certain questions about God. Or maybe there's seedlings that were planted of beliefs that you could take on yourself. Maybe some of your questions were answered. I don't know. I don't think that any of us are able to answer life's big questions. Maybe we can answer some, but definitely not all. But I do think that it's possible to get to a point where you understand enough to feel comfortable and grounded, and that the unknown becomes less scary because enough is known. Oops. Believe me, I was there with the overwhelming feeling of not knowing the meaning of life, not understanding things in life. And it does take time to shape your beliefs and enough time to hear out other people's perspectives and kind of trust yourself in whatever theories that you come up with. And any way you can conceptualize the world around you, if it's helpful to you, then that's your prerogative. Okay. Well, that was my two cents. That was my long two cents. I was hoping that this wouldn't be too long. But it's a dense topic. How are you going to talk about the meaning of life in 10 minutes? Well, you could, but there would be lots of questions unanswered. Okay, well, I'm not going to lie. I feel a little anxious because recording this felt kind of hard, because I wanted to make sure that I could explain some things in a concise way, explain it in a clear way, but clearly all of these topics are very convoluted and complicated. So, anyway, thank you so much for hearing me out and listening. I think this is something that I kind of needed and something I need to remind myself on a daily basis, my basic core values about being alive, because with this winter depression, the SAD, the seasonal affective disorder, the SAD, life becomes really hard, but having these basic beliefs is great. I think that your view on life and your perspective on life is something that should make you feel good. It shouldn't be something that makes you feel trapped and feel like you're living in obligation and living for something outside of yourself, because really you're here to explore yourself, experience the world as yourself. Okay. I love you for listening. Seriously, I seriously appreciate you. Please let me know what you thought about this episode. Please let me know if you have other theories, if you have things to add to what I said, if you disagree with some things that I said. I'd love to hear all of it, but just please keep it kind, because I really don't know how to respond to cruelty. It'll make me cry. And really the internet scares me, because people are scarily mean, so please don't be that person. All right. I don't think that any of you guys are mean. If you're here till the end, I don't think you're a mean person. Thank you. Take a deep breath. We're on a floating rock. All right, bye.